You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
John Brandon's second novel, Citrus County, has been getting a lot of attention, including a front-page review in the New York Times Book Review last month, in which Daniel Handler called it, quote, a great story in great prose, a story that keeps you turning pages even as you want to slow to savor them, full of characters who are real because they are so unlikely. The book is published by McSweeney's Rectangulars, and I'm very pleased that it brings John Brandon to our show today. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Is there a real place called Citrus County in Florida?
Yeah, that's on the Gulf Coast of Florida, a couple counties up from Tampa.
Now, when you say on the Gulf Coast, that sounds the kind of place that tourists would want to go to, but the Citrus County you portray in this novel is pretty depressed. It's hot, humid, poor. There are no beaches or other things that might attract tourists. This is the Florida that tourists don't see?
Yeah, I'm sure I'm overdoing it, but there's an area between the Panama City beach area, and then when you get down to Pinellas County, in between there's an area where there's really no beaches. It's just the swamps just kind of, you know, blend in with the Gulf, and the good of that is that it just stays the way it's always been. But they don't get all the money pouring in that the beach resort towns do.
I've always thought of Florida as a split state, with the northern part being part of the Deep South and the southern part being a part of the North. But
that's right.
This is the Deep South and the South.
Yeah, yeah. Citrus County, I guess it's probably be kind of on the border that it feels pretty southern, though. It's not down where it's all retirees, and I'd say it's a lot of Pentecostal churches and stuff like that, rather than retired Jews and Catholics.
Yeah. It's a place where people seem to wind up by accident, at least the characters in this book. Mr. Hibma, a middle school geography teacher, moved there after throwing a dart at a map. Do people go there by choice, or the ones who are there mostly people who come from there?
I don't think it would take a special sort of tourist to wind up there. I mean, just wanting to see where there's nothing for tourists, you know, which there are those sorts of tourists. But they don't have a lot of big industry or anything.
What about citrus? It's named Citrus County.
They still have some of that, but there's less and less of that all over Florida. I was just back home in Pasco County, and when I was young, there were just orange groves everywhere, and now there's, you know, it's a Home Depot and an apartment complex and all that. So I think California will probably take over the citrus market at some point.
Your main character is a 14-year-old boy named Toby McNurse who lives with his crazy uncle on a piece of land filled with sinkholes, and that has been a problem throughout Florida. Why did you choose a boy of that age to center a book on? It's always rough when you're writing from the perspective, at least partly, of somebody who's young.
Yeah, I wrote a short story with a character that age who is like Toby, but kind of used his powers for good, you know, used his ingenuity for positive things. And then after that, I started, you know, this version of Toby. And I had Toby and Uncle Neil to start with. That's what I started with, not knowing where it was going to go.
Well, this kid is not doing anything for good. He's an outsider, a troubled boy with no friends, no career aspirations. I'm assuming there are a lot of kids like him, although we hope not all of them do the kinds of things that Toby winds up doing.
Yeah, none of them. So, I started writing it not – I can't remember when I decided that he was going to do what he does, you know, real early on in the book. I imagine I just knew that I needed something to happen, and I, you know, sometimes you think of what the person's going to do and then shape their character around that sort of. But I, for the life of me, I can't really remember when I made that decision.
Well, we do get the feeling that he's intelligent and – and he's you make him a sympathetic character. was that part of the challenge for you?
It wasn't. It didn't feel like a challenge. I think it's you're writing somebody who to their reader is going to be villainous, but to you they just have problems like all the other characters. I mean, I sort of see them all the same. They're all into something they shouldn't be into. Who am I to say which is worse, really?
Well, you're making them up.
Yeah.
One of Toby's classmates, Shelby Register, just moved to Citrus County from the Midwest and thought it would be glamorous, at least until she got there. We get to see things from her point of view as well. And you had to also imagine the way a teenage girl would think. Probably was a little easier to think about Toby, what Toby thought, if you thought back to what you were like when you were 14.
Toby Toby was difficult to write. Mr. Hibma, their teacher, was the easiest one for me to write. I felt like I had some shared experiences with him.
Even though he comes off as both well-meaning and a bit deranged, he fantasizes about murdering a fellow teacher, for instance. Maybe that's what middle school teachers need to do to get through a school year.
Yeah, well, I taught high school and didn't make it an entire semester a few years ago. And I think Mr. Hibma, I kind of wrote him as, this is what I should have done. This is how I could have acted out, but I didn't. I just kind of took it and did a terrible job. And
where did you teach?
Ended up in Memphis, Tennessee. Ended up just crashing and burning. But, Mr. Hibma can do some things that I couldn't do.
Well, he tells the girls on the basketball team that he coaches that they need to get their hair and nails done because, quote, life was full of double standards and they should get used to it. That's the sort of thing that teachers are not supposed to tell the girls.
Yeah, I think half the time Mr. Hibma is being himself and half the time he's trying to figure out if he can be himself and be a teacher. He wants to just be able to be himself and be a teacher, but he's always lashing out against that at the same time as he wants to be that. So that's kind of, he goes back and forth with that throughout the book.
My guest is John Brandon, whose latest novel is Citrus County. I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but this young girl invites Toby to her house to play board games and watch TV. He tells her he can't make it and then goes out and commits a horrific crime. Is that based on something that actually happened? A Florida reviewer suggests that.
It wasn't based on that. There was a little girl kidnapped down there. I mean, several. It happens a lot. But I didn't have that in mind when I had that happen in the book, no.
At this point, your readers are asking themselves, why didn't he just do the normal thing and go and watch TV with the girl?
Yeah, that was one of the things with Toby's character. He is intrigued by Shelby, but he sort of hates her and is jealous of her and, wants to bring her down at the same time. And maybe over the course of the book, he sort of starts to regret what he's done. And he's probably wondering that same thing by the end, But in the beginning, he's just not available to him to do it, to go about it that way.
You've been compared in reviews to everyone from Cormac McCarthy to Mark Twain. That's a broad stretch. But I was wondering about the possible influence of J.D. Salinger.
I remember that was one of the first ones in high school that they gave us that I could tell was different than the other ones they had given us. The way the stories were sort of indeterminate and really they just were, they're almost like songs. I think that probably influenced a lot of writers today.
Although Holden Caulfield doesn't commit any crimes, but both this book and your first novel, Arkansas, center on crimes, although they're not crime fiction in the traditional sense. One reviewer called this book a criminal Bildungsroman. Do you like that description?
Yeah, I think I do like that. That's not bad. That's sort of what it is. I don't go to any lengths to try to really have the characters have a great arc and end up somewhere better than they started. But sometimes it happens accidentally, you know. So,
Arkansas, your first novel, was set in Arkansas. How important is a sense of place in your work? This one is also named after an area.
Yeah, they're both Arkansas and Citrus County. What they have in common is they're places that I used to drive through, back and forth through for different reasons. And I always thought in college is when I used to drive through Citrus County, going up to Gainesville and back. And every time I drive through it, there's nothing on. You're on Highway 19 there. There's nothing around, but you just know that something's going on. You don't know what it is. It's got a strange, diffuse energy. And I always thought, I'm going to use this as a setting. And then 10 years later, I did. And Arkansas always felt the same way driving through. It needed me to go in there and finish it off or something.
But you don't have the Southern accent, but do you think of yourself as a Southern writer?
No, I really don't. I don't have an accent because we grew up in the part where everybody's from all over the place, you know, down close to Tampa there. So you end up accentless. My dad's family is very Southern. My mom's family are Italians from New Jersey. You can't get away from that kind of Southern Gothic tradition. And I wouldn't want to, cause those are great writers, you know, Flannery O'Connor and all of them, but I don't ever.
Faulkner wasn't bad.
Yeah, no, he wasn't bad. I don't ever think about it though, really.
Well, this year you've been writer in residence at Old Miss, and that chair was funded by John Grisham and his wife. What's that experience been like?
Oh, that was the best. My wife and I were traveling for years before that. She's an occupational therapist, and we'd go. She got on with this traveling company. We'd go 3 months here, 3 months there, and I was working at factories. I'd just go to the temp agency, go down to the factory, and we were just starting to wonder what was going to stop us, because you get so much momentum doing it, you know, having that lifestyle, and there's no reason why you're ever going to go live somewhere forever. You just keep traveling, and we're getting just starting to get worn out. And out of nowhere, I got this call, because it's not something you apply for, that fellowship. You know, they just decide and call you. I had never heard of it. I didn't know it existed. And all of a sudden, we thought, well, here's our reason to stop traveling for a while.
Well, here you are. You have an MFA in writing from Washington University. You've written your first novel was very well received, got great reviews. But as you say, you work in factories. You've worked in a lumber mill, a windshield warehouse, a Coca-Cola distributor. And when you were writing this novel, I gather, you were working at a Frito-Lay warehouse and a Cisco warehouse. Were you doing it just simply because you weren't going to take a regular job, or were you also doing some research?
Well, it was a function of wanting to move around the country and with my wife's traveling job. And, you know, you just go somewhere for a random 3 month period. There's no use trying to get a real job. I would just go to the temp agency. But I found pretty quickly that it was great for writing, because you go to a job like that and there's no mental stress and you don't take anything home. So I'd get these shifts from, say, 6 to 2, 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., get off, take a nap, and then I'd have the whole evening to write. And my mind was fresh, and I used to get into great routine where I'd write basically every day. It was more productive than when you're in academia and there's just all these little things that are always stealing your mental energy all day.
So is it rougher to work on your next book now that you're a writer at residence at Ole Miss?
It's you just don't have the routine, and the routine is important. But in the spring, I'm hoping everything is going to calm down, and I'm going to get back into a routine then.
Did any of the people you met in all those different jobs wind up in any of your books?
Yeah, usually as characters, you only see for a paragraph or two. You know, the main characters, it's always hard to say where they come from, except for Mr. Hibma, as I said. We know where he came from. But just when you just need somebody for the main character to talk to here and there, you know, I could bring those people back up from the factories.
Well, the first book is Arkansas, the second one, Florida. Where's the next one going to be set?
It's the one I've got working on now is in New Mexico, around Albuquerque.
Well, this one is called Citrus County, and it is John Brandon's latest. Great reviews, and it's published by McSweeney's Rectangulars. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.